The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan reiterated his belief that Dublin is very safe, and this comes after some high-profile incidents, killings and assaults in the city centre in recent weeks. And a new survey of six countries show that while people think crime is increasing, stats actually show that crime is decreasing, and this is the same for Dublin. But many people disagree still with the Minister O'Callaghan's sentiments that this is a safe city. And Trina O'Connor is a criminologist and she joins us now. Trina, I have some of the crime stats in front of me. Homicide and related offences down 25%. This is between 2024 and 2025. Burglary and related offences down 13%. Robbery down 11%. Sexual offences down 9%. Like across the board, the serious crimes people would be worried about appear to be down, but that isn't necessarily how people feel.
Yeah, absolutely, Ciara. I think there is kind of a disconnect between the perceptions of the general public and the actual crime stats. So what we are seeing is we are seeing a rise in what would be described as low-level disorder. So murders may be down and a more serious crime, but things like antisocial behaviour, open-air drug dealing, retail theft, online harassment, they're all often on the rise. And people interact with these issues more frequently, almost in daily life. So that creates an environment that can be very chaotic and unsafe for people. So I think that's where the perception of rise in violence is kind of in contradiction to the stats themselves. And I think what we're seeing is the way we have the structure of media algorithms and a psychological phenomenon known as mean world syndrome and the real world gaps between the lived experience and the official data collection, that then leads to the daily experience for some people who feel unsafe, and that often contradicts the stats that are being released.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and I think you've nailed it. I mean, most of us hopefully will never come across homicide or murder or those types of very serious crimes. But if all of us are at an increasing rate coming across, as you say, antisocial behaviour, argy-bargy in the streets, people, that sort of air of intimidation, or as you say, open drug dealing, open drug use, if we're coming across that all the time, that kind of does skew our perception, doesn't it? Because everyone's going to come across that even if they never came across murder. So murder is invisible to most of us, thankfully.
Yeah, thankfully. But I think what we're seeing is we're seeing algorithms that amplify these kind of viral videos and that kind of dominance. So say for in the past, we like a local crime would have stayed local, but now with bystander footage, things can go viral and it can be repeated and repeated. And then there's some platforms who optimize violence for engagement. So they push content that triggers fear or outrage, and this spreads really fast. And often these things can be distorted or kept at the top of your feed within your social media platform. And then the thing around mean world syndrome, I mean, this is a psychological phenomenon which occurs when people are heavily exposed to violence online. And it can cause people to perceive the world as a much more dangerous place than it is. And it can continue and it confirm by showing you more and more videos. And, you know, the brain is hardwired for negativity bias, and that's a survival mechanism. So that's to notice and to remember threats. So if this is continually being pushed on people's platforms and they're continuing to look at them, then you can understand why people begin to feel unsafe. And also, I suppose, the way crime is measured as well, there is some discrepancies in stats all around the world, because some crimes go unreported. So it's only the stats that are reported that can be counted. So the reality for some people can be different, because they may be underreporting because the victims may be intimidated, or they may not be captured within them stats. So there's a lot of different reasons why the lived experience is different to the stats. Although we know since the 2000s, Europe and the level of extreme crime has gone down, there's different types of crime now that are on the rise.
Yeah. One of the things that has come out, though, is that homicide is almost always reported, but it is also reported to be falling, as I said, by 25%. So they're using that as a kind of a yardstick, because you're quite right, not every crime is reported. And somebody else says here on the text line, if I don't report crime because I don't know if the courts, the Gardaí, are going to do anything about it, doesn't mean crime is down. But we can only work with, the stats that we have. It's interesting you mentioned the algorithm, because I was thinking about it as you said it. And I was thinking, I see on my feed a lot, and I'm not on a huge amount of social media. I'm not on multiple platforms or anything, but I see a huge amount of feed on my own feed coming through migrant crime, and I'm interested in that because I'm not going looking for that. So I wonder, are there reasons why algorithms are performing the way they're performing that aren't just to do with what we're seeking or our own personal preferences? Because that, I'm, as you said it, I went, actually, now that you mention it, I've seen a lot of that. I wonder why that is something that is being pushed by certain algorithms, and I'm wondering, do you have any view on that?
Well, I think we need to look at the people that are running a lot of these platforms and what their own personal biases are. But I suppose from an atmosphere of safety, like for public safety, people's baseline of how they feel in terms of their own safety is often influenced by socioeconomic strains, like things like visible criminality or homelessness or high inflation. So when people feel economically insecure, they will notice things like a lack of policing, for example, in public spaces, and their general anxiety can be heightened into a fear of physical danger. So with these algorithms, if something has been reported as a migrant crime and people are feeling that maybe the housing crisis is an issue for them and they engage with one of them videos, then more videos will come to confirm for them that they're correct and they're thinking that's how these platforms work. They feed off people's fears.
Yeah. A lot of people texting and people very interested in this. Someone saying, I don't think that the rate of crime has dropped. I think it's the rate of reporting that has stopped. Who's going to get involved with the guards for a minor assault or theft? Not worth the grief. We just get on with it. Dublin is not safe. But lots of people saying other things too. Dublin is as safe as it's always been. Ireland is in the top 10 safest countries in the world. People are hypersensitive these days. There could be some truth in that. Someone else says, Brazilians here talk about how safe they find the city of Dublin in comparison to where they come from. It's all relative. And someone else says, Dublin is thronged with people out eating and drinking in restaurants every night. Where is the fear of being unsafe when we see this? Are we more sensitive to this, do you think, at the moment? The person who said that we're actually hypersensitive, Dublin is as safe as it ever was?
I'm not sure if we are. I think everybody's experience is individual to the communities that they frequent. So if you're somebody that comes from an area where there is low level criminality and maybe organised gang culture going on there, you might experience more violence. And I think often we do see clusters in different parts of the country, and that's small areas within each of the cities. That doesn't mean that the whole of Dublin is unsafe. There may be parts of Dublin where there's particular hotspots and issues that need to be dealt with, absolutely. But I think we need to look at the kind of things, the predictors of violence, for example, because a lot of people, it is the violence that scares them and frightens them. And violence, it rarely comes from one cause. It's kind of an intersection between like behavioural, psychological and environmental factors. So a person who has a history of violence or aggressive behaviour, for example, that's one of the strongest predictors of somebody who will commit another violent act. So it's about how we police people who are violent, how we deal with them through the criminal justice system. Another thing which would be another predictor of violence is intoxication. So when you've got alcohol or illicit drugs, this impairs, I suppose, what we call impulse controls, and it can increase the potential for violence. Then, of course, we've got antisocial personality traits. So people with a lack of empathy, a disregard for social norms, all of these different things are the predictors. So we know what the predictors of violence is. So it's how we respond to them. I think, like, even recently, I saw some commentary about parking on new housing estates. And I saw some of the notes that were left on people's cars. Like, that kind of thing is not acceptable and needs to be dealt with immediately before it turns violent. So you need mediation. So it's responding to emerging trends. So that's how we deal with these kind of escalations before they get to a very serious level.
Trina, does our perception of policing influence our perception of crime? And I'm just thinking, I am sitting here in Marconi Towers on the radio now, but when I was in my 20s, I lived a stone's throw from here. I lived in an apartment that you can actually see from this building. And I remember walking around town at night, and it did feel safer to me then than it does to me now. And I don't think that's because I'm all frightened or anything, but I think that there was a greater sort of Garda impact at that time than there appears to be now. And This text has come in. I rang the guards. Kids had broken into a house in town that I own but don't live in. They were in the house. It was 7 p.m. They were breaking windows, toilets, anything they could. Guards refused to come because they had no car, even though it was walking distance from the station. They refused to come in my car either. So I went and tackled the kids, got them out myself, but I took photos of them. I went back to the guards, showed them the photos. They said no point in recording it, that nothing would happen to the kids, just a warning. I asked, would this be recorded as a crime? The guard said no. He said he was on a few days off and it was a lot of paperwork. Better to leave it. Those are his words, not mine. Now, I can't verify anything in that, but if people think the guards aren't acting or aren't present or aren't visible, does that make them feel more unsafe? And does that make their perception of crime change in some way?
Yeah, I think what we see now is we see a need for more high visibility policing, and we also see a need for more community policing, and they need to be two separate things. So community policing is about building up relationships with young people, for example, children like this, who might be getting involved in antisocial behaviour, to interrupt and disrupt that criminal behaviour, to stop young people going down into career criminality, because these things always escalate. High visibility policing is very important, particularly in cities, particularly at night, late at night when there's being alcohol and normally illicit drugs. So it provides people with a feeling of safety. And from that person that wrote into you, I mean, that's a very disappointing story. I can't verify.
No, we're not saying we can. It's just a text.
Yeah. So that's not the way most of the guards would handle a situation like that, in my opinion and in my interactions with the guards. The guards are very good in interrupting, disrupting, like the Garda Diversion projects are there. But even before young people get to Garda Diversion, building up that community relationship with children and young people is what's crucial to disrupt and interrupt this kind of behaviour.
Other texts coming in along the same sort of lines. People don't bother reporting crimes because nothing happens. 2 years ago I was in the Dart, a knife was produced. I rang 112. I followed up afterwards. It hadn't even been passed on to the local station. Again, we can't verify texts that come in. We can only just say, someone else says, I was in Talbot Street the other day. It was the Wild West. Addicts screaming at each other. I'm a dub. I'm ashamed of the city. Look, keep your texts coming in to us. That was Trina O'Connor, their criminologist. But I'd love to know what people think about the city. You know, I'm here every day, but I don't live here. I work here and I walk around it a lot. I don't think it's all bad by any means, but I do think things like open drug use, open sort of antisocial behaviour,
that's got to stop,
has gone up.
Open drug use.
And it is that broken window theory, Shane, isn't it? When the city looks unloved or untended to or unprotected, it affects the mood, I think.
Yeah, and there is a new group being set up, a subset of Dublin City Council, headed up by Robert Watt, who, probably the best civil servant we've had in the last 30 years, and hopefully they will tackle some of those issues.
A man not to be trifled with.
No, definitely not, and that's what we need.
Let us know what you think about this perception, reality, your own experiences. We want to hear from you. 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman. With Kia. Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.